Thank you very much indeed. Excellent. Good. It's wonderful to be amongst some great, great people. There's a few faces that I recognise, quite a number of you I've never met and had the pleasure of spending time with you, but it's great to be part of what looks like a really, really rewarding day. And I guess part of my role today is to kind of get you a little bit warmed up. I want to share with you some hints, tips and suggestions that I've used in my own practice, but I've been privileged enough to, as we've heard beforehand, just share some ideas with quite a number of people as I travel up and down the country. So by way of introduction, and by way of a little bit of a warm-up, and please don't kind of start groaning at this point, because I would like to share some lessons and some ideas, but I would also, if we're able to have a little bit of a chuckle along the way, because it's nice to start with a little bit of a laugh. So what I would like you to do, if you are able to do this in a relatively enthusiastic way, could you all stand to your feet for me, pretty please? Excellent. So I'm hoping you can all see me. Now, what I'd like you to do, if you wouldn't mind, is put your arms out to the side. Now, don't go hugging people. We'll do that at the end. And that was an amazing day. Thank you ever so much. But you put your arms out to the side. If you've really not got a lot of room, you can put your arms in front of you. And here's what I'd like you to do, please. Could you put your hands together and interlock your fingers for me? Now then, if your right thumb is on the top, your right thumb, could you make out that you just won an egg and spoon race? And give me a little bit of this, if you would do. Excellent. Thank you for indulging me. Now, while you're kind of shaking your hands a little bit, can you look around the room? Because I'm going to reveal something about the right thumb people that they might not even know about themselves. So you're all getting a little bit curious now, going, okay. You see, this is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but go with me for a few moments, because some psychologists and social anthropologists have done some experiments on right thumb people, and they say you can tell an awful lot about a person depending on whether their right thumb or their left thumb is on the top. So if you're like me and you've got your left thumb on the top, can you now give me a little bit of this? So there's more of us in the room. That's very interesting. And whenever anybody involved in this line of work says interesting, everyone's going, interesting in what way? Okay, now then. Indulge me one last time. Right thumb people, give me a little bit of this, because we're going to start with you. Would you like to know what they say about the right thumb people? Yeah, I thought you might be. They say that you are more intelligent than the rest of us. Look at that, we've got people going, yay! People are feeling really good at this point. So sometimes I get introduced as a motivational speaker, and that's all you have to do. You just tell people they're smart, and they're going, oh yeah, I was doing my Sudoku on the train over here. So you're feeling really good, but it leaves the left thumb people going, well, hang on a minute, we know we're not that smart, so what about us? So again, just give me a little bit of this if your left thumb is on the top. Look at all the right thumb people looking around going, yeah, I'm smarter than them. Yeah, I know them, okay. So left thumb people, if you're like me, would you like to know what they say about us? We make better lovers. Get in! There you go, you see, you're not looking so smug now, are you? Or are you right thumb people going, oh, can I just say, if you had your thumbs side by side, that's a separate workshop that I'll be running a little bit later on. Okay, but they're interesting people to get to know. But joking aside, what I'd like you to do, if you wouldn't mind, is again, either put your hands in front of you or arms out to the side, please. This time you're going to do the opposite. So you clever right thumb people, you're going to become a little bit like me and a great lover. You're going to put your left thumb on the top. You great lovers, you're going to become smart. You're going to put your right thumb on the top. Could you do the opposite for me, please? So what am I hearing around the room? It feels really weird, doesn't it? It's a bit wrong. People are just looking at me going, it's wrong. Okay, it's just wrong. Okay. Can you do it that way, the way you've just done it, that wrong way, another 5 times in your own time? See if it begins to feel a little bit more normal, a little bit more natural, or does it still feel really peculiar? It's odd, isn't it? It's peculiar. Thank you. Grab a seat, and when you sit down, could you fold your arms for me, please? Okay, everyone's got their arms folded? Now fold your arms the other way. Got people looking at me going, I can't do this. People going out and getting another coffee or something. But for most people, they're kind of going, that feels really peculiar, doesn't it? You see, if I'd have sat with you on your table before we started and said, hi, my name's Ed, when you put your hands together, is it your right or your left thumb that's on the top? You'll be thinking, who asks weird questions like that? You see, you wouldn't know until you actually do it. You could say, well, it's my left or it's my right. Likewise, when you fold your arms, it's a realization that for all of us in this room, you've been putting your hands together and you have been folding your arms the same way for years and years and years without even thinking about it. Is that fair? It's only when I come along at the beginning of a day like today and said, actually, try doing it differently. Try a different approach that you say, but that feels really uncomfortable. That's not my normal, natural way of doing things. I'm not sure I really like that. And I guess as I introduce some suggestions, it's a case of recognizing that for all of us, whether we're very experienced, very well qualified, or indeed with the people that we're working with, those mentees, those coachees, although I'm not particularly fond of those phrases, but those people that we're working with, encouraging them and supporting them in the way that you do as wonderful mentors and coaches, it's a case of recognizing that for all of us, whether it's us as practitioners or whether it's those people, we have formed habits in our lives that are actually very difficult to change or break. Again, is that fair? And I think if I'm honest with you, there are some people that are extremely well qualified, but sometimes we get so used to using a particular approach, so used to using a particular format or methodology that a day like today, if we're open to it, could allow us to say, maybe you could tweak that, maybe you could change the other. And it might be a bit awkward and uncomfortable, not your natural, normal way of doing things, but maybe the strength of a day like today is just to say, could we be open to hearing some suggestions, some ideas that maybe you haven't come across beforehand? And we've got some great people available today, so ask them questions, get involved in those sorts of things, in order that actually, for you as practitioners, but also for the people that you're working alongside, just to get them to say, yeah, I recognize that you've formed these habits, but those habits can either help you, or if we're honest, sometimes they can hinder you. And it's a case of learning that although it is sometimes awkward and uncomfortable, not people's normal, natural way of doing things, it is possible to get people to change. What I'd love to do now requires two volunteers. Before you decide whether that's going to be you or not, let me tell you what you're going to do. You're going to come up to the stage here. You'll be up on stage for no more than a couple of minutes. And I will get you to play with my balls. I'm very sorry if that offends anybody, but I tend to go most places with a little bit of a beach ball. So it's an exaggeration to use a plural, but I'm just going to show you something that I came across a little while ago that just helped me out in so many different situations. So I would love it while I grab a little bit of my drink, and I'm going to miraculously turn around, and there'll be two people that have made their way here to the stage, because they're only going to be up here for 2 minutes. I won't embarrass anyone. And in order to encourage them, would you mind ever so much, start giving them a bit of a round of applause, and somebody come on up. First two people up, pretty please. Excellent stuff. Good. Now, there's not a step up, but would you mind ever so much making your way up here? Wonderful. May I ask your name?
I'm B.
B, lovely to meet you.
Meenakshi.
Is that correct? Close-ish. Okay. So, I'm going to ask you both a question, if I may. B, as you look at this beach ball, what colours do you see?
Yellow, orange and blue.
Fantastic. And as you look at the same beach ball, what colours do you see?
White, green, red.
Fantastic. That's all you needed to do. You can go and take a seat. Give him a round of applause if you would, pretty please. So you might be thinking, so has he just done a little experiment to see if they're colourblind or not? But actually, my point is this, and there is a point to all the random things that I might ask you to get involved in or some of the things that I share. But as I've got B on my right, your left, and I say, B, as you look at this beach ball, what colours do you see? She quite rightly says that from her perspective, from where she stood, from her position, the beach ball is yellow, it's orange and it's blue. And as I hold this beach ball up, showing you what it was that our friend B could see, you would say, yeah, absolutely. From where I'm sat, from my perspective, from my point of view, the beach ball is yellow, it's orange, and it's blue. And as I move this around the room, through no fault of your own, you are incapable of seeing my side of the beach ball. Is that fair? You see, as I've got our friend on my left, your right, and I say, when you look at the same beach ball, what colours do you see? She described it differently and said, actually, from where she stood, it's white, it's green, and it's red. And some of the challenges that I find as I spend time coaching people and walking alongside them as they navigate this thing called life, it's often the way that they describe themselves, or the way that they describe a particular situation or person or problem is very different to how I see it. And I, if I'm honest with you, had a time whereby maybe out of arrogance and ignorance, I kind of thought, no, 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 the way you see it is wrong. I need to help you understand that actually the way that I see it, maybe the way that your colleagues see it, or maybe your superiors see it, is actually correct. And you're misguided, or you see it incorrectly. But what I've learned over the years is that actually it isn't always that simple. And what I've learned is that although I have a role whereby I coach people, mentor people, and to an extent sort of befriend people, it's a case of sometimes saying, yes, I have that role, but I'm open to learning from you, just like I'm hoping that you can learn from me. And rather than it be a case of saying, I'm right and you're wrong, maybe actually we could both be right here. And maybe actually it's a case of saying, look, can I learn from a guy called Stephen Covey, which I'm sure many of you have heard of? In his book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, what he said was that if we can seek first to understand and then to be understood, it aids relationship. You see, sometimes we think that communication is all about agreement. Okay, so you're going to argue with me your side of seeing things, and I'm going to argue my case, and maybe actually I convince you that I'm right and you're wrong, and you kind of fall in line with my approach to things. But actually, maybe it's a case of starting conversations by saying, help me understand your side of the beach ball. Help me understand how it is that you think, feel, and act, because it's different to me. But rather than thinking that you're right and I'm wrong, or that you're wrong and I'm right, maybe actually, once I've sought to understand your side of the beach ball, because through no fault of my own, I can't see it, because I haven't lived your life. And what I liked about when I was asked to get involved today, they were talking about, well, we're talking about the future, but we're also recognizing that sometimes our values, sometimes the things that have happened to in our past will obviously shape how we see the world and people within that world. And so I will try and start most conversations by saying, help me understand your side of the beach ball. But then I would go so far as to saying, having sought first to understand, can I also help you go some way to understanding a little bit more about maybe how I see it, maybe how other people see it? Not out of a place of arrogance and ignorance, but it's a case of saying, actually, I recognize that you haven't kind of experienced what I've experienced. You haven't experienced what other people have experienced. But if we can share and pool these ideas, then maybe actually we get a better understanding of ourselves and other people. You see, that approach across the board, whether it's in community groups or working with CEOs of global companies, most people kind of go, that's really simple and yet could be quite helpful. The last thing that I'm going to do with a beach ball does mean that I'm going to annoy somebody. I'm very sorry, but it is going to be you. When I say I'm going to annoy you, you can stay sat down. But may I firstly ask your name?
Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. It's nice to see you. Am I right in thinking that you can currently see 3 colours?
Yes.
So when I say I'm going to annoy you, it's because I'm going to bring it really close to your face. Okay? Please don't hit me or kick me or anything like that. Okay? I've got witnesses in the room. But as I bring it really close to your face, it just amuses me because there's a grown lady with a beach ball in her face. But am I right in thinking you can maybe see a little bit of the orange, a little bit of the red, but mainly see the yellow?
Yes.
Thank you for being a good sport. See, isn't it the case that sometimes in life we get so close to something we lose perspective? It could be a particular challenge, a particular problem. Sometimes we get so close to it that actually what we could do with doing is just taking a few moments just to get a little bit of perspective. Recognizing we're never going to see the whole picture because none of us can. But maybe even on a day like today, with the guest speakers and the conversations that you're going to have during our time together, it's a case of saying, actually, you bring what you've got, you bring what you've got, and we can get a better understanding of ourselves and other people. Or even using today just to say, okay, I just need to reflect. I just need to take a few moments to better understand myself and my approach to supporting other people. And I love quotes, so it's great to see a number of quotes that were coming up here from Gandhi and other people. And one of the ones that I came across is this. And it's been used in a number of different contexts, and people have kind of played around with it just a little bit. But I think it was Anais Nin that says, "We do not see the world as we are. We do not see the world as it is, but as we are. For it is the I behind the eye that does the seeing." And when I begin to recognize that with so many people, it's the eye behind the eye that does the seeing, it helps me understand the beach ball. It helps me understand that we've all got our challenges, our insecurities at various different levels in terms of our professional abilities. But when we are sensitive to that, when we understand and appreciate that actually for a lot of people to go through any form of change and transition is awkward and uncomfortable. It's not their normal natural position, but it's a case, I believe, as mentors and coaches of guiding people and supporting people as they go through. The beach ball was used by a guy called Paul McGee. a dear friend of mine, and I get to work very closely with Paul. I can't recommend his material enough. He's written 11 books, and one of which is called Sumo. And on the face value of it, a number of people get a little bit of offended because it talks about shut up and move on. But when I first came across it, I recognized that as I read the book and unpacked it, he was saying that sometimes some of the things that go on in here, rather than being helpful and healthy, they're actually unhelpful and unhealthy. And sometimes actually what goes on in here actually begins to affect what goes on in here and how we act and those sorts of things. And I've used some of his material just to be able to inform the way that I support people, the way that I encourage people, particularly the beach ball. And across the board, I can say hand on heart that there are many, many organizations up and down this country that when they have board meetings or even when they go home and they're having time with their partners and with their family, they'll take a beach ball and say, you know what, this is a beach ball moment. And can we recognize that you and I are not the problem? The problem is the problem. So you put your energies into it, I'll put my energies into it, and it means that actually we don't necessarily have to agree, but it aids our relationship if I have a better understanding of your side of the beach ball because I can't see it because I haven't lived your life. So the beach ball has been really helpful to me. I got invited a number of years ago to work with an organization that works nationally supporting people in the criminal justice system. And although I had spent time sort of working in men's prisons, women's prisons, young offenders, and I was fascinated by what it is that compels people to act in a way that is actually different to a number of other people. When we put the National Mentoring Program together, and I was working with a number of different people, we had to find different approaches. And I came across this. It's called Kintsugi. Just out of interest, has anyone ever come across Kintsugi? By a quick show of hands, so a few of you. So again, I don't want to sort of patronize or anything along those lines, but I recognize that sometimes, as the Japanese will do, when something is broken, what they do, they aggrandize it. They take a resin and they infuse it with gold. And when they fix it, when they mend it, it becomes even more beautiful. And so for me, when I'm working with people that have utterly broken lives, in their words, not mine, but also when I work with hugely successful people, people running global companies earning a huge amount of money, all of the trappings that success brings, there are times whereby, if I'm honest with you, I can apply that to their lives, but also to mine. And what I've recognized is that sometimes some of the things that I've been through personally, the businesses that haven't gone as well as I would like, the mistakes that I've made as I've taken large organization through significant change, all of those things that I kind of beat myself up over, sometimes actually, if I'm honest, I can use some of those things to help me be a bit more sensitive, a bit more empathetic, a bit more understanding of other people. And I'd like to think that actually some of my brokenness, for want of a better phrase, has helped shape the way that I approach other people. But what I've also found is that in people's lives, when they've gone for a promotion and they haven't got it, and they think, well, why would I put myself through that again? Actually, it's a little bit like, well, what can you learn from it? What can you do differently? How can you take some of the things that you see as being broken, as failures, and how can you infuse it with gold and take the very thing that could stop you moving forward and be the kind of catalyst for you saying, you know what, there's a purpose to that. And maybe I can use that to inform the way that I support and encourage others as leaders and as managers. And it's great that we've got a huge mix of people, as I've chatted to a few involved in O&D and HR. And there's a few people that are very well qualified, other people that are just embarking on this thing called mentoring and coaching. And across the board, I'd love that you could kind of remember some of these images and begin to say, okay, so what can I use? Because a little bit of humility and perhaps even a little bit of vulnerability can sometimes help people an awful lot. As I move on, I just want to recognize that as I look at kind of a Chinese symbol, and I do a lot around communication, and I observe coaches, mentors in those sessions, and I try and sensitively give some feedback, give them some steer on maybe how they could develop and how they could improve things. And this is one of the approaches that I use. Some of you might have come across it. If we had more time, I would unpack this more, but I will say this, and I don't mean to be controversial, but there's an awful lot of people that I meet that think they are really good at listening, but actually they're not. You see, most people don't listen. They wait for their chance to speak. And for me, as a coach that loves stuff like The Coaching Habit by Michael Bungay Stanier, what a great name that is. He had to be an author with a name like that. But I love all of those questions that he says, that if you ask these questions in a skilled way, it helps move people beyond where they are to a new place, a better place. But I unpack it in this way just very quickly. I say, look, when there's any connection, any communication with your mentees, with your coachees, maybe there needs to be a connection of the heart. We need to feel to an extent the way that they feel. I am guilty sometimes of being distracted. My mind can be on lots of different questions, lots of tools that I've come across that I think, well, I could use that, we could do it in a slightly different way. But I recognize actually what I need to do sometimes is just say, you know what, it needs to be one-to-one, undivided attention. I need to remove those distractions. I talk about eyes, we need eye contact. And again, it sounds like we're talking about the future and maybe technology and how that can be used. Now, I've been part of setting up mentoring, coaching projects that use online tools and those sorts of things. But again, I'll say this. As cheesy as it may be, in the days of iPads and iPhones, don't forget eyeballs. There's something about just connecting, seeing people, and in the busyness of life, sometimes, if I'm honest with you, sometimes I've defaulted to quick and easy, rather than sitting down with quality time. The next one is two ears and one mouth. I'm sure you've heard that a number of times. But the last thing I want to share on this slide is actually around this. And when I came across this, it had, I don't think it's an exaggeration, but it had a profound impact on the way that I approach, the way that I support other people. You see, what the Chinese say is that when we listen to people, it's an act of servitude. And they say that actually what we do is we elevate that other person to a position of kingship or queenship, and we serve them by listening. I love that. And it's great to have a few smiles and nods around the room, because for me, we can get, if I'm not careful, so caught up in all of these different approaches and things, but sometimes we actually have to strip all of that back and just recognize, have I elevated that person to a position of kingship or queenship, and have I served them by listening? Or have I been so caught up with my own kind of approach to saying, well, I ought to do this, I ought to do the other? Have I given them quality time to actually listen rather than waiting for my opportunity to speak? I'll give you a moment just to have a little look at the quote on the screen there. So this kind of sensitive, active listening is exceedingly rare in our lives. We think we listen, but very rarely do we listen with real understanding and true empathy. Yet listening of this very special kind is one of the most potent forces for change that I know. I know that you can use various models. I know that there are some great methodologies out there, and I devour books, I devour the kind of theory around all of those sorts of things. But what I'm learning as well is that there is sometimes a bit of a balance, not so much a trade-off, but a balance to saying, absolutely use those things. But of all of the skills that I think we all need to develop, it's a genuine interest in other people. A genuine curiosity almost to say, help me understand your side of the beach ball because I can't see it. And I'll allow that to inform how I ask those questions, how I structure our times together, whether they're short and regular or whether they're extended periods of time. Because if I can better understand you and your side of the beach ball, actually I can get the best out of you. Because all of us are very different, as I'm sure you'll agree. And as I coach and mentor numbers of different people, I've found that actually sometimes the things that work with one person actually really, really, really don't work with other people. And that experience has taught me that I can take a textbook and I can take an approach that might have worked a number of times, but sometimes through no fault of my own, it doesn't seem to resonate with other people. Have you had moments like that? Think, what is it? Is it me? And you can then begin to think, well, I've lost my knack, or I don't know. I love the fact that actually sometimes the greatest potential or the greatest potent for change is actually doing something that we can all do, but it takes practice, it takes discipline, and we need to be intentional about it. I said that there were lessons from McGee, Paul McGee from the book Sumo. I said that there were lessons from Matt, and Matt Waugh, when he was involved in the Community Chaplaincy Association, was instrumental in helping me understand why it is that people behave in ways that I don't understand. I don't get that kind of approach to life that they've made those choices. When Matt Waugh kind of introduced me to things like desistance theory, I'd never understood all of those things, but I've been fascinated by kind of spending time with hugely academic people at Cambridge University and all number of places. And I have also recognized that Maya Angelou, who I'm sure many of you have heard. Maya Angelou said this: I've learned that people forget what you say, people forget what you do, but they never forget how you make them feel. Sometimes our role, I believe, as mentors and coaches is to make people feel able to take the next step, to feel valued, to feel a sense of worth, to make them feel as though actually it is worth the risk, to make them feel as though there is somebody championing them, not setting them up to fail, to say, oh, yeah, yeah, you can achieve anything you want to achieve, but having some wisdom in that to say, okay, so if this is where we are and that's really where you want to go, whether it's in your personal life or your professional life, how do we navigate in order to achieve the things that you know is in you? And part of all of our roles, I believe, is to get people to be inspired, bearing in mind that actually to inspire means to breathe life. I recognize that in the room of 180 people, some of you are going to be knackered. I don't mean to be offensive at all. You're all looking pretty good with the teas and the coffees and the great pastries and those sorts of things. But I recognize this, that as I go around and I speak at conferences and I spend time with people in similar roles to the ones that are represented here, when I talk about people being tired, it can be that when we talk about inspiration, I'm reminded of this little approach. And with this, I begin to draw to a close. If you go on an airplane and you are flying, they'll say something along the lines of, the exits are here, here, and here. But then they say something that's quite interesting. And it says something along the lines of, if there's a sudden drop in pressure, something's going to drop from above. What is it? Oxygen mask, thank you. Now, what do they tell you to do with it first? Put it on yourself first. You see, one of the reasons why so many people in the roles and responsibilities that we've got represented here today are so tired is because oftentimes, actually, what we're doing is putting everybody else's oxygen mask on. Does that sound familiar? There's a few knowing smiles and looks around the room. We're so tired because we're putting everyone else's oxygen mask on. Actually, we don't take time to put our own oxygen mask on. Can I just say, you will be a better mentor. You will be a better coach. You will be a better friend, colleague, partner to people, parent to somebody, if you take a few moments sometimes just to put your own oxygen mask on. Again, if nothing else, maybe today gives you an opportunity to say, okay, I want to have life breathed into me. I want to be inspired again. I've been doing this for a number of years, but maybe I've come to this conference to say, okay, give me some new ideas. Give me some new approaches. Give me something that I can take away that I can begin to apply very, very, very quickly. Because for all of us in this room, the potential that's wrapped up in the work that you do is huge. The difference that you can make, and it was an honour to sit and talk to Kim and hear about how over 30 years she's been supporting people, encouraging people, coaching people, and I think you were talking about 4,000 people now that you have kind of been involved in helping them, supporting them, and enabling them to go from where they are to an even better place. But as I travel up and down the country, I get to meet those people and I assess projects, but I also get to interview people that are the beneficiaries of people like you. I get to hear how people have got alongside them, coached them, mentored them, and enabled them to move on in their career, to be able to take on new roles and responsibilities that if you'd have said that they would have been doing that a year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, they'll say, I can't see it. There's no way that I can recognize that I have the potential or I have the skills, but through people like yourselves have said, actually, there's something in you, and if you'll allow me to walk alongside you, then maybe I can give you some ideas, some hints, tips, and suggestions. Not out of a place of arrogance or ignorance, but a case of saying, okay, I've learned some stuff, I've experienced some stuff, and maybe we can just have a chat as we spend some time together. I'd love to listen to you. I'd love to hear your story. I'd love to hear what it is that's kind of shaped you as an individual and why it is that you're passionate about achieving this or why that's so important to you. But then as we're walking along, can I share with you my side of the beach, Paul? Can I check with you how maybe I would approach it, and maybe how your colleagues might approach it? How maybe other people that have a different approach to you, because actually through no fault of your own, you can't yet see it. But what I would love to think is that as we've got 180 people here today, we begin to go to a place whereby we learn loads, we absorb loads on a day like today, but we start to apply it very quickly. And I started off by asking you to do all of this and all of this. Thank you for doing that. But I want to end in the same place. See, if we're not careful, we can go away from a day like today to say, that was great. I love the food, and apparently the food here is fantastic. It was one of the first things Sam said. I know it's going to take you about 2.5 hours to get here. We can't pay you to come along, but would you come? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely, because I've heard great reports that the pastries and those sorts of things are brilliant. So that's the only reason I'm here, in all honesty. I'm just going to be sat in the corner after I've said what I'm going to say and wrap up in the next few moments, just to kind of eat all the way through. But on a serious note, you can go, yeah, it was great, liked it, fairly entertaining, but also some great information being passed on. But the challenge is, can you start to apply it? Because we can form habits ourselves and just default back to a way that does work, but maybe the importance of a day like today is to go, even though it's a bit awkward and uncomfortable because you're not competent yet, you haven't used those new approaches, but the more you do it, the more it becomes a little bit normal and a little bit more natural. And I'll close with this one, which is a little bit challenging. The enemy of excellence is competence. The enemy of excellence is competence. I've chatted to a few of you. I've chatted to a few of you that are very, very well qualified, very, very experienced. And I just want to throw out a bit of a challenge. Whether you're sat here for almost the first time to come to a conference like this saying, give me some information, give me some advice, give me some tools that I can use because I'm new to this, or whether you are somebody that has a wealth of experience that, and a wealth of kind of qualifications and those sorts of things, could we all be open on a day like today to saying, okay, maybe I just need to be open to changing, adapting, kind of developing myself. And I guess if we go out of here at the end of the day, having learned something, taken some tools on board that we can start to apply, not for our benefit, although you will benefit, but for the benefit and good of other people, then that's got to be a day worth spending together. So I just now need to do what it says on the front cover of Paul McGee's book. I need to shut up and move on so you can get on with your day. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Before I formally thank you, we've got some time for questions. So if anyone has a question, there are people with mics around the room. Raise your hand. Yeah. I thought you saw one then. You were so purposeful. Okay, well, I had one question, which was, how do you, Ed, get your oxygen mask on first? What do you do?
That's a great question. Let me firstly put that back, otherwise all the other speakers will be going, where on earth is that little clicker thing? How do I get my oxygen? It depends. Professionally, I actually love coming along to conferences like this. I love being mentored myself and coached myself, so I'm fortunate that over the years, some people have invested their time in me. Sometimes it's face-to-face, sometimes we use Skype and FaceTime with people over in the States. In my personal life, if I'm honest with you, what I tend to do, because I do a lot of travelling and giving out quite a lot, I actually love walking my dog. Yeah. I love nothing more than being at home with my family. They give me energy. And as it was, we had a family over yesterday. We spent some time with a family that are just having a really tough time in life. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, but just to answer your question a little bit more fully, they are hugely successful people. You would look at their lifestyle and you would say, my goodness me, I would love a house like that. I would love the cars. I'd love the holidays. But they were vulnerable enough to say to my wife and I, actually, do you mind if we come over? Can we have a chat? So yesterday, we cooked them a Sunday roast, and we just kind of just chatted to them. And over a meal and over a table, we just kind of did the stuff that I might have kind of called coaching and mentoring. But actually, it's just building relationship with people, just talking with them. And what I found is that actually that does energize me. And part of that is that recognizing for me to give out actually does make me feel good about myself. But if I keep doing it, there is a tipping point. And for those very people, they are so gregarious, so outgoing, and they host and entertain 5 or 6 nights a week. And they're constantly giving out. And what we recognise is that actually, for them as a couple, one of the success factors for them is not so much the houses and the monies, although that was very important to them. It was actually their relationship with one another and their kids. And so we were beginning to say, okay, so what do you now need to do? How do you get energised? How do you kind of laugh together and those sorts of things? And so for me, it's giving out, but also my downtime with my wife and my kids and walking my little silly dog. Okay?
Lovely. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And I won't tell the dog you called it silly.
It is daft. It really is daft.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Ed. That was a wonderful, energetic and colourful start to the day. You made me think about lots of things. You made me reflect and gave me some reminders about the remarkable power of attention. Things, you know, when we know something so well, we can have a tendency to negate its value and its importance. And I think you got that message across really well, going back to those things that made such an impact on us when we first learned them. You also reminded me about self-care for coaches. And I have a tendency to get my oxygen from doing more coaching. And the question I always ask myself is it nourishing me? Is this still nourishing me? It's a good question to ask. I loved that idea of you bring what you've got and I bring what I've got, walking alongside people, which really resonates with current thinking around the rise of the master coachee. The people we are coaching being masters of their own lives and actually becoming increasingly equipped in knowledge about coaching themselves. So really more and more today meeting people absolutely in a position of equality. Wonderful. And then that final lovely reminder about how unconscious competence can start tipping around that circle and go into unconscious incompetence. Thank you so much. Really great start to get us grounded for open-mindedness and changing perspective throughout the rest of the day. One more round of applause. Thank you.